Empire of the Suns.
Suns. Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to another episode of the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I am a reporter, editor, writer for ArizonaSports.com. The man sitting across from me holds those same titles. His name is Kevin Zimmerman. Hey, Kevin. How you doing? Let's talk Suns basketball.
Suns winning basketball. And what? We left off with the crazy non-trade, the Brooks thing. And the Suns finally did trade Trevor Ariza for Kelly Oubre. Since then, Austin Rivers was released, and they've won three more games, and it's a four-game winning streak against a couple not good teams, and then a couple teams that are, you know, hovering around 500, should be pretty good, have a lot of talent.
Yeah, Timberwolves, Celtics, and Knicks are the three games that we haven't talked about since, and then they, of course, the first game of the winning streak was against Dallas on primetime, where Charles Barkley infamously called his shot. We started this podcast, I believe, in Devin Booker's rookie season. It was either that season or the season after, meaning that as long as we have done this podcast and worked in this building, the Suns have not gone on a four-game win streak. But that ends. That ends. They beat the Celtics on Wednesday. Oh, my gosh. My brain.
Yes, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, on Wednesday. That was one of the better wins that they've had just because I think the Celtics were trading shots with them, especially in the early going. But the thing about a team like the Celtics and other teams is that when you're playing not the three to four best teams, there are always weaknesses within those teams. I think Minnesota, it was very clearly their defensive, I don't know how to phrase it, but like the first phase of their defense. It was like once the first phase of their defense broke down, I think we call this Suns-itis, is once the ball denial ends or whatever and the ball gets in the lane, it just dies. Their rotations, and once you got the ball in the lane against them, it seemed like it worked. And the Knicks, it was obviously just the talent level and the fact that the Suns were a better overall team, especially with the names they were missing. And for Boston, it's that you know that their offense is going to go through lulls during a game. And you just have to stay consistent and stay on them and keep producing your own offense while playing your best defensively. And we saw that over the course of the game, it got them in it. The shots that Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier, it's like you just have to live with the ones that go in because a lot of them are going to go out. Even the wide open threes, even by Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, all these types of guys. Marcus Morris didn't play, but he's another one.
Everyone other than Kyrie.
Just deal with them making those shots and then deal with the possessions where Kyrie just does Kyrie things, and you should be able to stay in the game with them. And I think that's why I'm so encouraged by these four wins. And then Dallas was clearly the same kind of thing where their offense isn't going to be a top level. It's not a top level offense, not even a great offense, really. Maybe not even a good offense because they just don't. The synchronization and the fit between DSJ, Doncic, Barnes, and Matthews as a foursome with DeAndre Jordan is kind of murky. It's like Barnes's guy should be more of just a pick and pop, smart, not ball dominant score type of guy. Wesley Matthews kind of fits in there, but he should be able to do more off the dribble as the third guy who can handle the ball. But that's what Barnes is doing. So you're playing all these teams. My point is you're playing all these teams where you can beat them, but you just need to beat them by being competitive and knowing what you are and going out and executing it. And that's my long-winded way of saying that I think this is a great sign that the team is figuring a lot of things out at once.
We came on the very first podcast this season after the season opener against Dallas, which, to your point, it's a good matchup for this specific team, I think. I think they're probably going to beat that team more. They have a great matchup across the board more than most teams, but we came on after they beat them the first time and said, this is a well-coached basketball team, and of course, you look back at that now and everything we wrote, and it looks like, oh, that went poorly. Like, that didn't hold up. That was just an anomaly. And I'm still going to stand by that and say no. Like, yes, they played a team they match up well against, but what you saw was them running offense, them playing with confidence that later went away in games after that. But they've refound that. And I think when you talk about Igor and people calling for his head or whatever, like, this is, the last four games are more evidence that, and there were games scattered throughout, and it was very rare, but it was every five games, maybe there'd be one where you're like, hey, that looked good, win or loss. This team is in that spot where they just had to get through all these hurdles. And again, Utah fans said it about Igor's offense, but it's also been on defense. Like, we can talk about this in depth in a sec, but their defense has been, it's simple, but it's effective. And he's not lost the locker room. He's gotten more effort as, Trevor Ariza leaves, as Ryan Anderson's left the lineup. And they're playing to their strengths now and confident in one another and helping each other on both ends. And you see, when you say the first phase of their defense, like, if someone switches or someone helps, there's a reaction to that help. And then there's a reaction to that help, if there needs to be, if the team doesn't. Like, Kyrie Irving is going to make some crazy shots, but he also went into that mode that helped them in that first meeting where he was like, I'm going to score, we're coming back on my back, and they had answers for him and would help their teammates defending him one-on-one. So all of that is to say, I think we've seen legit growth. Yes, the competition hasn't been great, and I went on Twitter and said this, like, parity in the NBA right now is extremely high, aside from the Suns. Like, you look at the West standings, the Suns are like seven games back or so of the 14th place team, but pretty much all of the teams in the Eastern Conference, maybe aside from the Raptors, probably any team outside of what? The Thunder, the Warriors, like, the Suns could beat them playing this way.
They for sure can. And a point that I've made a lot with this team, specifically last year with Devin Booker and TJ Warren, is when one of those two has a bad game, this team can't really win at all. You look at the Boston game, and I think TJ Warren played pretty well. I think DeAndre Ayton was great, but I don't think Devin Booker played that well. He offensively, I don't think he was that great to his standards of being the best guy on this team and one of the best scoring guards in the league. I don't think he was that great, but he did play well defensively. And this team's effort as a whole was able to pick him up, and they were able to get enough done in crunch time to seal the win. And that, to me, is the most impressive part of this four-game win streak so far. Obviously, the game is in Boston, but I think winning it in a game where Booker, yes, he had 28 points or whatever, but I think he added on like 23 or 24 shots. He was clearly not getting exactly what he wanted. He started the game 0 for 4, made his next five shots, and then fell off a bit from there again. I think a big misconception around the league, to bring it back to kind of the defense here, is when Sam Hinkie got fired from the Sixers, that didn't mean that they were going to completely stop doing the quote-unquote process or drafting or acquiring process like players. Zaire Smith is kind of a perfect process pick in a way. Just raw upside, defensive intangibles, clear athleticism gaps and things like that. Like, Landry Shamet is another guy that's a clear process type of pick. So when Ryan McDonough gets fired, that does not mean that, it could mean this, but it doesn't mean that the entire organization's shift comes when it comes to the players or the foundation of the team that they're trying to build. And Ryan McDonough's plan was very clearly, and this is without Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris anymore, was grabbing a bunch of switchy wings slash forwards slash bigs. And his ultimate end goal, I believe, was looking at something like Bender, Chris, frontcourt with Jackson, Bridges, Booker, and two more of those types of guys. So Melton, Oubre, I guess, in this example. And just daring teams. Ayton, I guess, is another one where he could switch on some stuff and just daring teams to challenge them athletically with their switching and with how much they can just consistently do things. I tweeted out my favorite defensive possession of that game. It was featuring Mikal Bridges guarding Terry Rozier, Josh Jackson guarding Kyrie Irving, and Kelly Oubre guarding Jason Tatum. And they can do that. That's just the stuff that those guys can do if they're playing at this level. So when So when they acquire Kelly Oubre, he just fits right in with what they're doing and clearly what they want to continue to do, which is have these switchy athletic wings who are very long but offer different things on the court at the same time. All of them are very different players. And to the defense, it was not that it was inevitable that this was going to come together, but if you grab enough of these guys, it's eventually going to come together in some facet. And I think Melton and Bridges and Holmes really push this over the edge, because I don't think we credit Holmes enough for the defensive job that he's done this year. I think in the Celtics game, he was tremendous. And I just think that this has really all come together so well. And the point that I've been making that I don't think I've made on this podcast yet, since we haven't talked about it since the winning streak, is that this is starting to rub off on Warren and Booker. And I believe Warren had 6 deflections in the Boston game. Devin Booker had 5. DeAndre Ayton obviously defensively has made huge strides in the past week or two, and I think this is the best defense Booker has played in his career over the course of 3 or more games, which I know isn't saying much, but at the same time, defensive consistency has been a zero for him, and he actually has found some in the past couple of games, and it turns out, hey, he's actually, maybe he's never going to be average, but he can be below average and survive if he tries enough.
I want to ask you, just because of the Oubre pickup, I mean, he hit some open threes, he was driving and slashing, and you were right on this like last podcast before he played a game, and it's obviously only a game, but he's that guy that's blowing kisses to the Boston crowd and adding to that energy where like he's making a tipped ball, and then it just kind of snowballs on the Celtics where Mikhail's playing off that after, I think, that play you're talking about, it was thrown all into the backcourt and they had to reset their offense and stuff. So with that said, with Mikal, Josh, Kelly, or even TJ in that starting lineup for Oubre, what do the Suns do with point guard? Because I'm of the opinion Melton has been figured out, and by figured out, I mean teams are just respecting that he can hit an open shot.
And then he can attack, too.
And he can kind of attack and make plays, and he's good enough. But I really like him still in the starting lineup. Like, I think I don't even care if he doesn't play down the stretch like that Boston game. If he can steal 18 to 25 minutes a night, some in the front half against starting point guards, and use all of his energy there, I don't want to see Point Book there. I can see Point Book from the second quarter on, even. And I think that's where it's extremely valuable when you're talking about, all right, they waived Austin Rivers, who we thought was going to be that guy, whether we can argue all day about whether he would be even better than Melton maybe offensively, but I think Melton's still a huge guy as far as Booker being 100% rested at the end of games. And then if you want to go wing switchy time and no point guard, that's fine later on.
I agree to a certain extent. The direction I'll take this is, if this trend continues, and what I mean by that is the Suns win over 20 games this season, which if we said that 2 months ago, it's like, oh God. But right now, that's very, not very optimistic, but it's positive. It would be a positive turn because they're at 8 right now. They're 8-24, so they're 32 games in. So they're right around the pace for 20, and I think 25 would really signal, 25 or more would really signal something positive is going on right now. I'm going to clear my throat, everyone. Hold on 1 second. 3, 2, 1, go. Still sick. They keep winning, and I'm still sick. Just can't escape it. If they continue this trend, and they have clearly figured out this is what they are going to do, at least defensively, if this is going to be the plan going forward, and they are going to keep getting better at it and keep executing it, my number one and number two priority this offseason is getting Rashawn Holmes back and getting Kelly Oubre back. So if that money means that I'm not getting a point guard, I actually am okay with it, because offensively, I think there's enough there. There's just enough there. And you've got Ayton a year older, and you've got Booker now. I think we're going to start to see him really come into his own now that he's finally healthy. I know he didn't play the best against Boston, but to me, I think, I don't know if it's that important if you're playing this way defensively all the time, because the main appeal of it is the guys that we just mentioned. Rashawn Holmes comes off the bench. Josh Jackson comes off the bench. Kelly Oubre comes off the bench in this scenario. So if you're 8-9 deep and you're switching your rotation around, you've still got teams completely change their identities and change their playbooks and change everything when they're moving guys around and bringing in their bench or playing the bench with the starters and stuff. I don't think much changes for them at all defensively with these guys that they switch around, especially Holmes, I think, is so important. So if that all means you miss out on a chance of signing Ricky Rubio or whatever, that's completely fine with me. I think the Ryan Anderson expiring obviously is going to hurt you on the cap sheet, and don't stretch him, first of all. Let's not do that. Just eat it for one more year. It'll be fine. But I think if this trend continues and this turns out to really, you're really onto something here with the defensive thing here, you've got enough offense with Booker, Ayton, and Warren. And Booker in particular has shown so much growth as an actual quote-unquote point guard that I don't think you need to add a point guard next to him. But with that being said, if certain names become available and you can move your first-round pick and the Milwaukee pick and one of these guys for a marquee point guard or something close to that or just a top 15, 20 guy, I would still do it.
Yeah.
But as far as priorities, this is a very of the time, of the matter thing we're talking about. This conversation in 3 weeks could be completely different.
Yeah, I want to just point out, because I don't want to be hypocritical, because we've spent a lot of this season saying, yeah, they need a ball handler next to Booker, and they have not gone out and gotten that guy. Kelly Oubre is not that guy. Austin Rivers probably wouldn't even be that guy. Melton, again, on... speaking on offense, has helped a lot. Whether he can keep it up is a thing, but then it's a matter of like what in the last four games has made it look like Booker's not getting worn down dribbling and pounding the ball into the floor so much? Like, is it just they're getting used to the offense and they're running it? Because before it was a just he had to, and I've been looking and like, yeah, he's running offense, but he's making quick decisions. He's not burning a lot of energy.
He's pacing himself, yeah.
Yeah, and it's picking spots better. Maybe it's his doing, but do you have an answer to this as far as where those...
The Spurs game is chief one. He had 12 assists in that game and was just the point guard. And he's had multiple games this year where he's been the point guard and been fine. And I know the argument has been no point book, don't wear him down, but if you can just buy your time for another year, I don't think it's that big of a deal, because I think the more important, getting a point guard, yes, I don't think they can be a really good team until they get a point guard. But if I don't think people realize how substantial it is what we're seeing defensively and just the pieces that they already have. What they've actually kind of turned into is they've actually got a lot of guys you would love to play with. Yes, Josh Jackson's going to drive your head into a wall with his step back jumpers and bad shots and turnovers or whatever, but he is going to work his tail off every single second he's on the court. Kelly Oubre is going to blow kisses on his first night with the team. Rashawn Holmes is going to be everywhere. Mikal Bridges is going to just make those one or two huge plays that swing a game. De'Anthony Melton's kind of the same sort of dude to a lesser extent.
And they're all annoying.
They're all annoying. And then you've got the overall skill offensively of guys like Booker and Warren. I think Ayton is actually a guy who would drive you crazy mostly at this stage, but who knows where he's at in a year or two, a couple of years. And then Jamal Crawford. I did a creep on Oubre's Twitter, and he's been retweeting Jamal Crawford a couple times throughout the season, so I think he's another Josh Jackson like type of guy who looks up to Jamal Crawford and stuff, and I think he just has obviously been such a positive for this team beyond even on the court, where he's actually been okay. He's been in the locker room and actually being the veteran presence we've talked about. I mean, he ranks number one in the veteran presences on this team in the last 4 years, and I don't think it's even close, in my opinion.
It's crazy because I'm not tooting my own horn, but I am. Just we use those buzzwords about veteran leadership and a voice in the locker room, blah, blah, blah. It matters if you can play one, which Trevor Ariza could play, but he wanted out. It's crazy when you talk about intangibles and all that nonsense that, like, if you look at most draft nerds, like people like us, I guess, we don't often like to talk about those things. We like to talk about potential and the wingspan and all that, but you see what Jamal Crawford's doing actually matter. You see him being positive every single night at practice, at shoot-arounds. You see him on the sideline during games. And that game against the Knicks, where he's at a career high at this point in assists, was really telling, because the next game, Devin Booker, another guy who looks up to them, to him, goes out and starts whipping these passes that are kind of like playing with the opposition. Like, people think Devin Booker and Jamal Crawford are going to pound the rock into the ground, and they were coming off screens and immediately just whipping the ball to the other side of the court. And that stood out, like, whoa, Booker's doing that right after Crawford did that, and teams don't know what to do because they're not used to these guys just giving up the ball like that. And I don't know if it was just coincidence, but I think Booker's taking things away like that from Crawford. And that's huge.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's an important thing to hit on in terms of point guard kind of stuff right now. But to look at it long term, you've got Melton at point guard, and then you obviously have the other name you need to add there. I'm not, even if Melton plays well this year for the rest of the year, I'm not willing to say, yeah, you should just start him next year and not even worry about getting a point guard anymore. I'm not going to be there yet. So you got him there. And then at the 2 through 3 through 4, really, which has just become this whole conglomerate of things, you've got Booker, Jackson, Bridges, Oubre, Warren.
Yeah.
So there's one more spot there. Probably a more traditional 4 is the best bet.
Re-sign Bender.
Yeah, and having Warren come off the bench.
I don't think they're going to do that based on...
Doesn't seem likely. That's somewhere, by the way, when we talk draft in like a month and a half, that one other spot, I have a couple names that I actually really like for them. If someone can actually come here and develop and improve, for the love of God, please. And then at center, you got Aiden Holmes, and that's all you need. So to take it back to, I don't think point guard has to be the biggest thing to grab right now, point, you've got this already kind of figured out. And not only have you got the roster already kind of figured out to some extent, the style that they're going to play with is right in front of you, and you're executing it right now.
I think.
So again, just if this continues and you play this way the rest of the year, and that is with a very, very heavy emphasis. If they fall off in the last 15 games, I'm like, whatever, just get the point guard. But if this is actually a real thing that is happening with the switchy defense and the energy and the nonstop hustle, and you win 24 games this season, pay Oubre's money, pay Holmes's money, see if you can squeeze a point guard in there somewhere. But if you can't, that's fine, because now we've got our identity as a team. Booker will carry the offense for the time being until we can find the right trade for a point guard, and you go from there.
I was going to say, just going into the offseason, like you said, if this isn't just a 4-game stretch, you sell this in free agency. And I don't know what star would want to come here. I won't even go there now. We can talk about it later. But if you say, hey, you have another star in Booker who's young, and we have all these very good role players who already have chemistry, who already have this defensive identity, that's a lot to sell, I think. If we ignore the Suns, but yeah, it's huge. Not just for the development of these players, because look, is Josh Jackson going to be an all-star ever? In his second year, not even halfway, I'm going to say no, but he can be a very, very good role player still, despite all of his flaws. And, you know, he's looked a lot better recently. To your point about guys picking up what Mikal's doing and just figuring out, hey, this is what you need to do. And we want to pump the brakes on that too, because that's a small sample size. But yeah, just role player wise, you talked about this in the Oubre pickup. He's just a guy who you know is an NBA player who's good. Not great superstar, but has his ID. That's where they're at right now.
And he is a good NBA basketball player, and the Suns have two of those right now. If Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton improve over the season, I think they can be added to the list. But
I think they're safely in. Like,
yeah, they're safely in. Okay. Yeah, this probably
have Rashawn
hard on rookies. Yeah, Rashawn's probably there. Honestly, yeah. it's only been 35 games, and we haven't seen enough of a sample size in him in this type of role yet, but he looks good.
Melton's defense every game looks good. He might even be like, yeah, that's a backup point guard, but they have pieces. It's a lot better looking than before.
So if someone listening can't really grasp what we're trying to get at here yet, just picture Zion with this group and just the all-out athleticism, defense, diving for loose balls, big play after big play after. You know when a guy goes diving into the stands for the steal, saves it to someone who then makes a quick outlet pass, and it's a two-on-one, and that guy makes a nice pass, and it's an alley-oop dunk, those types of sequences. That's kind of what we're getting at here, and Zion would further accentuate that. Duh, he's the number one pick in this draft. Duh, he's one of the best number one pick
prospects. He's number three on ESPN's draft board, Kellen.
In a very long... Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Actually, is he three? I don't know.
No, he's one on theirs.
Is
he? Yeah, they moved it around. They had him at three at the start of the season, and then the Kentucky game happened.
I swear I just looked, but okay.
Everyone, including me, who had... I had RJ one before the first game, and then I saw the first game, and I was like, oh, whoops.
Yeah.
It's that guy. But just if you've seen him play, you see the type of winning intangibles, all-out effort, intensity type of thing.
Intensity.
And that is exactly what this team has been doing in the past four games. And if you add a guy like him, or if you add just one more guy in there that can do that type of stuff and offer you different skill sets, I think Zion is a really interesting case because the power driving game, they don't really have anyone like that. I guess TJ kind of and Josh kind of, but... like the power, slashing, and playmaking, I don't think anyone offers that on this team. Just adding someone who adds a different dynamic, but at the same time has all those core traits you desire, that's what I'm kind of getting at here, is now you're really, really onto something. Even if it's not him, even if it's one of the other guys in this draft, and then we're not going to go into draft names, it's still 2018. Relax, everyone. 2019 is
almost
the year.
There, Kellen.
Almost there. I'm itching. but that's just, I kind of just wanted to throw him out as an all-time great outcome example, just to kind of get at the point that we're saying, and now people are gonna say, well, what if you don't get Zion? Then does this... I think it still works to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And it does. And that's, I think it was important that you hit on how Booker has looked in this past four games and just watching him very closely and being like, okay, how are you handling point Book? Are you still getting to where you want? Is your scoring stuff still happening as naturally as it is? And in the, over the past four games, over the past, really, since he came back from the injury, I would say that he's looked that way. And time will tell. If he looks more uncomfortable in the next couple of weeks, that's another pivot point we can hit on. But I think this was a good conversation to have, because who knows how relevant it'll be in a month, or who knows if this will be extremely relevant in 3 months.
What else?
What else? Do we hit on Austin Rivers being a locker room cancer and also not being that good at basketball? And why would the Suns really take him? Because if they took him on, oh yeah, Jamal Crawford probably wouldn't play. And when John Gambador keeps going on the air and says, Jamal Crawford just wants to play, man. He just wants to play. He loves playing. You probably don't want to make the guy unhappy that is really helping out your locker room right now by adding Austin Rivers into the equation.
I got like texts from people like, please tell me that they're going to waive him. I was like, I don't know. They might, but I don't think so, and luckily I was wrong.
How do we feel about him not getting like a buyout? The Suns just pretty much outright waiving him. They got $625,000, I believe, was the report from Gina Mazzell.
I have no idea.
I think that's just a shrug. The Suns are really bad at this, because I don't know how to really answer it, you know?
I think you tie this in with Ariza, and when we talked about all of the things that all of these role players that are playing now for the Suns have and bring, I like was defending Trevor Ariza a lot, but I don't know if there's much room to do that after watching like him put up numbers with the Wizards and the same thing. Like, he just didn't have something. I don't know what that something was, though. And that's what I feared with Austin Rivers, where it's, I don't know if it's indifference or like, I don't know what you call that. It's just something was missing with him. And I think the same thing would be missing with Austin Rivers. Kelly Oubre has that whatever is missing between those guys.
I grabbed the postgame quote from the Athletic's Fred Katz from Ariza after the second loss he had with them, where he was just like, guys aren't really trying right now. And I think he's going through another oh crap, what did I get myself into?
I mean, I said that. Like when he wanted out of Phoenix so bad. Like he wanted out of Phoenix, right?
Yeah.
Like we've seen that in reports. People assumed that because he wanted that, and it's like, oh wow, you're going to a quite possibly worse situation, because like I don't care how many wins they have, the Suns locker room I do not believe was as bad as the Wizards locker room. So
there is I tried to ask this, and I realized after I asked it, like, oh, he's never going to say anything, but I asked Booker about like the team chemistry compared to the past couple of years, and it's very obvious that, not to say the team chemistry was bad in the past couple of years, but this group noticeably
it was some weird characters at the very least.
But yeah, there were some intertwinings there where you could maybe lead one dot to the other, but they clearly like each other, and it's not really a surprise that they've come together and put together some sort of winning basketball over the course of a week, just because of how much they get along and their team chemistry and everything. It's been pretty clear from day one that this group gets together, and that the additions of guys like Crawford and Holmes have really helped, and I think Oubre is going to slide right in. I mean, like, how can you not like that guy after his first shift in the game? Like, just playing with him, first of all, and then, like, as Suns fans already, I tweeted out the thing that he's got, like, that light Manu in him, and we talked about it on the podcast, where you hate playing against him, but you love him on your team, and I said, like, you guys are going to like him. It's going to be fine. And I think everyone, anyone who needed convincing, just watch that Celtics game. They're like, oh, that's my guy. I'm getting that jersey
for
Christmas.
If he came in on Bickley and Marauder and was just like, yeah, I'm going to kill people straight up. Like, if that didn't grab you, then blowing kisses to Celtics fans might have grabbed you. Hitting a game-winning shot might have grabbed you. Playing inspired defense would have grabbed
you. Have you seen his eyes? My goodness me. Goodness gracious.
There was like a Suns Twitter argument was whether he's more attractive than Booker. And it's like, well, Suns Twitter is doing better than before.
This is the content I crave.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I don't think there's really much else to hit on. So they play on Saturday and Sunday. So it's a road back to back, which is a nice little test because they're not really two elite opponents either. It is Washington and Brooklyn, I believe, are the two games.
I know it's Washington next because Kelly Oubre started saying something at the end of that Suns broadcast, and then he got cut off, and Tom Leander's like, no, he was going to say something good about playing the Wizards.
Oh, he's...
Yeah.
I'm worried about his safety, actually, that he's just going to play so hard that his muscles give out or something.
Yeah.
He's just going to go. He's going to go after Trevor Ariza specifically.
Because
he's
going to
be in
fun.
That locker room and be like, I got you guys. Don't worry. He didn't want to be here. I want to be here. I got him.
I want to see some messy, like, close to fights breaking out against between two very bad teams.
You're acting like there's a Morris twin that's going to be playing in that. Oh.
Oh, who has been benched and banished because of the Trevor?
Interesting. Okay. I either said this on this podcast, another podcast, or just two in.
You said it in the world.
I said it somewhere. This 5-game road trip was always intriguing to me because it was a chance for them to like put things together. But also, after that, they have a lot of tough home games. They play Denver, they play Golden State, they play Philly, they play the Clippers. There's a lot of really good teams coming into town after this road trip. So I'm interested to see where we land after this weekend's games. And we will check in with you guys sometime next week. Of course, we've got the holidays coming up. Merry Christmas to all of you listeners. We appreciate you guys as always, but end of next week, after the holidays have passed and everything, we'll check in and see where this team is at. Hopefully progress continues to be made and we have positive things to talk about. Was that the least negative episode we've had this year? It has to be, right?
Ever.
We actually went and said like they don't really need a point guard, kind of, which is just...
That's why I said we are not being hypocritical in some way.
I'm so proud of us. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all of that stuff. If there's a podcast thing you listen to podcasts on, we're probably on there. Leave us a review if you want. Be honest. 1-star, 5-star, however you feel. I always preach honesty on this podcast, as always. All right, guys. See you next time.
Later.